You're listening to Severance by Andy Evans. Chapter 4, The Cracker. As the sun rose, the moon itself began to realize its worst fears. The citizens had gone on for so long believing that Severance was a crime-free zone that the lawmen had gotten lazy. Now they'd paid the price as the sheriff and his deputies lay dead on the steps of their department. Judge and his men had shattered the illusion of peace. It was only a matter of time before someone came to town and did it, so it might as well be the Storm Riders. Some folks had wondered if a stray troop of browncoats might have arrived to rebel against the Alliance. A remote place like this could have suited them. But this was different. This seemed to be destruction and fear for a different reason. None of the Storm Riders was here in the name of a cause, unless that cause was self-interest and profit. They were here to get whatever they could. Virtually no one had witnessed the confrontation with Johansson, at least no one who lived to tell anything other than Judge's version of events anyhow. As the sun was reaching its peak, the town was operating in an uneasy workmanlike fashion. Folks seemed to be going about their daily lives, though some were repairing the damage from the night before. But the sight of the horses tied up in the main street and the men strutting around with guns reminded them that they were not alone. Someone else was here on Severance. Someone who had no time for pleasantries and who'd ripped up the rule book. These farmers were hardy, but they weren't stupid. They knew that the Storm Riders were happy to dispose of anyone who opposed them, so they placated the riders. And, despite gritted teeth, they kowtowed to the whims and urges of any rider who crossed their path. Only one person had seemed to be willing to stand against them. That person was Maldwyn. Oh, he hadn't stood up to them as yet, but then they hadn't demanded anything of him. He was trying to figure out how he could oppose the riders and what the odds against him would be. He walked down the main street and watched as riders took without any sense of guilt. He saw how they treated the locals with disdain and mocked the efforts to patch up the windows and the like. They even spat in the coffins brought in to receive the bodies of the lawmen and laughed at the undertaker. One of the riders jeered and asked him if he'd taken his own measurements, because he'd need them real soon. Oh, the rage was beginning to build up inside Maldwyn, but he didn't have any idea how to vent his feelings, so he seethed, quietly for now, biding his time. After all, who knew how long these guys would remain on the moon? Meanwhile, Daniel was already patching up the window in Jacob's bedroom. The little boy looked less pale than he had last night, but he knew that he'd been right to be scared. He looked across the street and saw three men standing in the street with their guns at the ready, keeping an eye out for the troublemakers in town. Daniel had taken a couple of shells from the corner of the room and was using them as a makeshift seal to prevent the elements from entering the room. But he was worried. This was not why he'd brought his family here. Everyone had told him that although life may bring in its train some difficulties on aboard a moon, this moon would be safe. This moon had no crime. This moon was an industrious moon. Martha tried to draw Jacob's attention from the men in the street and pulled him away from the windows. She made him promise that he would keep away from the windows until she said it was safe again. The sound of Daniel and other citizens hammering nails into window frames echoed across town. Maybe it was the hammering that woke him. The throbbing in his head and the brightness of the morning lights hurt Amos as he stumbled from the chair in which he'd fallen asleep. His limbs were heavy and his head hurt. He felt nauseous. He knew he should have drunk less the night before, but hindsight's always 20/20. It's the here and now that's just a little more fuzzy. He began by picking up his suitcase and looking for some fresh clothes to wear. Then he walked to the sink and began to wash himself when suddenly he turned, collapsing into a sorry heap on the floor, hugging the toilet bowl. It would be a while before he could greet the world. As it stood, he still knew nothing of the events of the night before. He felt a feverish sweat on his forehead and began to pray that the feelings would pass quickly. Judge was strutting around outside the sheriff's office as if he was the new lawman in town, and was constantly checking up on a watch to see what the time was. But as he paced, he was checking something else. Some paperwork. He had a job to do here, Unlike many of his fellow riders, Judge was not a cheap criminal enjoying the spoils of victory after a night of riotous behavior. He had a job to do, and that job would not do itself. He was acquainting himself with the registered citizens on Severance. There was a bounty to be claimed, and he was eager to claim it. The records he was reading were limited. Johansson had been right. Judge could not access the complete register without assistance, but he had paper copies of the most recent arrivals, so he would begin by scrutinizing those. See what he could glean. Then he read the name of Amos Abercrombie and saw exactly what he needed to see. Amos was listed as a computer specialist. Just the sort of man that would be able to help Judge to break into Johansson's computer files. He sent his men to the address shown on the records with orders to bring Abercrombie to him. The door crashed open with one swift kick. Amos turned and saw three men with guns staring down at the pathetic heap hugging the toilet bowl, unwilling to stand for fear of vomiting once again. And yet, all he was doing now was retching. There was nothing left inside him to come out short of his lungs and his stomach lining. But now he was yanked up and told that he was leaving, that someone wanted to see him. He was taken to the sheriff's office, still disheveled, looking likely to be sick any moment. "Boys, I want you to meet my contingency plan." "Amos, meet the boys," said Judge. "Hey, Judge, I'd say it's good to see you, but with my head, my eyes, my stomach feeling like this, it just wouldn't be true now, would it?" replied Amos. "Amos here is a computer genius, trained on Osiris. He's the number one hacker of his generation."
"Of any generation, I'll thank you.
I sent him ahead of us as a legitimate citizen to this here moon. It was the best way for him to get his equipment shipped in without arousing suspicion. Amos has everything he needs to decrypt any files the lawman held here, and the ability to tie back into the cortex despite the problems of making it reach out this far."
"So, I should be able to send messages back to headquarters uninterrupted once the room stops spinning," Amos chipped in.
One of Judge's goons replied, "So Judge, why didn't we just bring Abercrombie with us? I mean, he could have flown in under the radar like we did." Judge glared at him. "Now, Silas, that is a very good question, but the thing is, the powers that be didn't want to tie Abercrombie to the Storm Riders. They might need to use him again, and they prefer if he can keep a clean record. That's why I had you go break down his door and drag him here like he was an unwilling participant in our scheme. So as a registered citizen of Severance, who came with a specific job to do, folks will just believe that Abercrombie got scared. And when we leave, why, Amos here will be so traumatized that he'll need to fly off this garam hunk of junk and go back to the core planets to make an honest living again. Until we need him once more." Amos looked across the room.
"So what am I working with, Judge? The PVS 1720 is a fairly complex system. It's not state-of-the-art, but they were always difficult to crack. Can you get some of your boys to drag me back unwillingly to my apartment to get the equipment I need? It's not going to be a quick job decrypting every file held by the sheriff, you know."
"Suit yourself," said Judge. Then he suddenly punched Amos right in the eye, cutting his brow. "Now folks will believe you're being forced to help us."
"Gee, thanks for that, Judge. Remind me I owe you later," said a bitter-looking Abercrombie.
"Well, if anyone's unconvinced, you may need to take a bullet too and get treatment from the town's doctors. But don't worry. If I have to do it, I'll avoid any life-threatening injury or major arteries. Just enough to convince them that you were not my man." With that, the riders escorted Amos back out into the bright sunlight, and folks witnessed how this poor new arrival was being treated so badly by the Storm Riders. One struck a blow behind his knees, knocking him to the floor, and the second kicked him in the gut before placing him on horseback and returning him to his apartment to pick up the equipment. Maldwin witnessed this with increasing rage, not knowing that these plays were nothing more than just that, plays. All he saw was the Storm Riders continuing to abuse a citizen. And if Severance was truly to come of age as a cooperative, then the time would come for each to stand shoulder to shoulder and defend what was theirs. He began to formulate an idea and looked around for weapons. He knew that these outlaws could never give up. Not without a fight. But if they were organized, they would already be thinking about claiming all the weapons before the citizens had a chance to rally and become organized. So that's just what they did. The Storm Riders systematically worked their way through the town, demanding at gunpoint that citizens should surrender any firearms that they held, ransacking houses to show they meant business, looking for what they could. But they found very few firearms and took away anything that looked like it could possibly be used as a weapon in order to subvert them. Malwyn's forward thinking had proved invaluable, however, as he had hidden arms that he'd brought with him to the moon. He was an old-fashioned type, and despite the moon's reputation as peace-loving, he'd brought in some guns and ammo, and also a sword that had been his when he served in the Alliance during his period of conscription. He had hoped he would never need them, but was reluctant to part with them and made a secret hiding place behind a wall panel in his workshop that held not only his weapons, but also his personal valuables, as few as there were. The hiding place was invisible to the naked eye, and he felt happy that his stockpile, which now also included several of the knives he used to work the leather, would remain undisclosed. He would bide his time and see if any others would help him now that the sheriff and his men were no more. Eventually, Amos and his captors returned to the sheriff's department with all of his equipment in tow, and by now Amos was looking considerably bruised from Judge's blow. But far less queasy than on his first visit. He began to set up the equipment and ordered the Storm Riders with ruthless efficiency until his station was set up ready to crack the sheriff's system. Judge remained an interested observer rather than an active participant. "So what are we actually looking for when I crack the PVS?" asked Amos. "We're looking for someone working undercover. Deep cover. Someone that the Alliance is willing to pay handsomely for." With that, Judge ordered everyone except Amos from the room. He continued, "You see, the thing is, the person has become something of a thorn in the side for the Alliance." "A thorn?" quizzed Amos. "Indeed. This person was trained at great expense by the powers that be to do a very specific job, and they let them down. They escaped taking all their training and knowledge and went deep, deep undercover into hiding. So you not only need to crack the computer, but then we have to decide whose story doesn't ring true. And we need to pay a little visit to our friend to persuade them as to the error of their ways. The men in suits want to welcome them back into the fold."
"And if they don't want to come back?"
"Oh, I already said the bounty is to bring them back dead or alive. And like I say, I prefer dead. If they can't have their little toy, then nobody can. But they want to make sure that they dispose of the evidence so it doesn't fall into the wrong hands." Amos looked concerned. "So who is this target? Are we looking for a male, a female, young, old, black, white, yellow, red? When did they move here?" "They didn't say." "They didn't say? That's just crazy. The less that's known about this person, the better. But I'll know when I check out their backgrounds, and you don't need to know at all. You're here as a cracker, so get cracking." With that, Amos flipped the switch, and a low hum emerged as his equipment came to life. This was a difficult job at best, but at least he didn't have to find the toy for the men in suits. He would be safe once his work was done. Listen again for Chapter 5 of Severance by Andy Evans. We want to thank our friends at Magnatune.com for providing us with all the music that you heard featured in this broadcast.